to me, risk and procrastination go hand in hand because so many people put risk, but then they put things off, right? And when you put things off, that level of procrastination, I think, puts more anxiety and more more what ifs into people's mind. But I learned early on, if you don't face that confrontation head on, then you are going to have issues and you're going to let people run over you and your business for all time.
So you have a passion for fitness and the desire to start your own business. But launching a massively successful fitness business is extremely complex. The systems, operations, hiring, firing, coaching, sales, and marketing are critical to success. Where do you even start? This show will give you the answers. Here is Bedros Koulian and Bryce Henson, your hosts of the Fitness Franchise Podcast, a show dedicated to helping fitness entrepreneurs launch and grow successful gyms.
Welcome back, friends, to another incredible episode, as today's guest is a dear friend of mine who's recognized as a hands-on entrepreneur with strong problem-solving, leadership, and a collaborative style, who can initiate change, build consensus, and implement new processes in challenging work environments. Now, in his role as CEO of Icon Meals, Todd oversees the direction of the company, delivers strategy for growth and profitability, and executes on this plan. Now, Todd also manages the sales and marketing functions of the company with a focus on building the Icon brand through a variety of marketing mediums and strategic partners. Now, along with his tenured background in a variety of executive roles, he is also an International Federation of Bodybuilding Pro Men's Physique competitor and competes among the best athletes in the world for this division. Todd Abrams, welcome to the show, my friend. Super pumped to have you.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, Bryce. I'm excited to be on and to get to chat.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was quite the impressive rap sheet. We'll get into a lot of things in discussion today. Before we do, give our audience the backstory.
Yeah, for sure. So grew up not in the States, grew up in Canada. So if you guys hear outs and abouts in house, then don't get too thrown off. I've been down here for many years, but originally grew up in Ontario and came down sort of background as a kid, loved to play sports, different things. I grew up in an interesting industry. My dad owned funeral homes and cemeteries. So from that standpoint, a little bit outside the norm, I'll call it business structure. And but at a young age, I saw the entrepreneurial bug in him and what he had built, right? Again, me growing up playing sports and different things, I wasn't always in the shape I am today. My nickname sort of growing up used to be Lumpy. So always had that, I guess, preconceived notion of being overweight, right? Not necessarily like, I'll call it embarrassed overweight, but just knowing that I was holding a lot more than I should be, right? I was loved training, loved doing different things, but had no clue exactly what I was doing. We'd go to the gym, throw some weight around, different things, but then I think eating everything and anything was putting calories in my body and supposed to be helping me on my journey. But again, long story, I'll just shorten it for you. So grew up that way, played junior hockey up in Canada. I was supposed to go to school to play hockey. 18 years old, got mono, severe mono, was put in the hospital for 3 weeks, lost 42 pounds in 3 weeks in intensive care. So that sort of shortened the structure of going to play hockey, still went to school. But as you can imagine, having coming into the hospital, I guess it was a great weight loss, right? But not one that I would want to have anyone else have. Lost about 3 inches off my waist, a couple inches off my legs, etc. So that muscle really had to grow back and had to retrain in different things again, right? So, but that was sort of a changing point in my life because I had that opportunity that I think maybe I didn't want to have, but I was, I'll say blessed with because it was a blessing in disguise that really made me never want to go back to being that 250, 260 pounds that I had been, right? I came out weighing 200 pounds and went to school and did all the fun stuff that the college kids do. But along that way, and I know we're going to talk about this, I think that's when a lot of my mindset, right? My education, my different, I'll call it my levels of discipline and different things, those sort of started kicking in as I learned more and more and more. And that was sort of a process from, I'll call it 18, 19, 20, 21. And again, then sort of fast track, I came out of school, didn't plan to work, planned to take a little while off, was going to go to the West Coast, be a ski bum for a while. Ended up getting a job working for, was supposed to be a driver of a computer technology company in Toronto. Ended up the guy when I was away called my parents, said, hey, can he sell? And they're like, I don't know, call him. So I called him and ended up having a sales job. Wasn't supposed to be a sales guy. Went ahead, and that's sort of where everything started, right? I've never worked for anyone I never had a real job. Like, it's, if you want to say a 9-to-5, it's always been myself looking at different things. I'll take that back a few years, even just sort of into my teens. In Tottenham, where I grew up, there was the big Honda factory. That was the thing, right? Everyone was supposed to be Honda. Came and put in like 20, 30,000 jobs. And everyone had to get in there because that was like, you had made it if you'd got in Honda. And I was going to school, came back, and my dad's like, you got to go get a job here in the summer, whatever. So I applied, got in. And for me, it's just not something that's within my DNA, right? I cannot do where you walk in, you're trained, you're in a white jumpsuit, you're walking between yellow lines, okay? You go and you do four jobs a day for four, like each job 2 hours a day, and then you go back to the cafeteria. And I just, so after 2.5 weeks, I quit. And my dad was like, oh my gosh, you've like tarnished your reputation. You're never gonna blah, 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 blah. And what did I do? I went network marketing where I had zero salary, 100% commission, going from working 40 hours a week to working 90 to 110 hours a week in crazy heat and looking at knocking on some of these doors in some of the neighborhoods in Toronto, just like surprised I didn't get shot, right? But again, my mentality of how I look at risk and how I look at different things in business, I think that was really one of the criteria that really helped me propel me to where I am today, because a lot of that training that I wasn't paying for and stuff, but was from different mentors and different people outside of that industry, in that sort of network marketing industry, I think really laid a lot of foundation for my personal growth. Because prior to that, sure, I knew, hey, I wanted to get better and be better and grow. And I loved looking at all the successful people, but then really understanding the building blocks, right, of participating in masterminds, participating in a mentorship, participating in different things that you can set. So that sort of fast-tracked me into, like I told you, I had that sales job. I built Toronto. We owned one of the largest computer component technology companies. So back in the day, it was like the microprocessors. We were mass selling those, and memory and all the different components. And that was back when, I don't know, 15-inch monitors were like $500, right? So we were bringing them in by truckload and stuff and just killing it. And we opened Ontario. I went to Montreal, lived in Montreal for a year and a half. Built that location, went to Vancouver, and then came down to the U.S. Looking for a headquarters in the U.S. That's how I got down here. So, again, worked for them for a year and a half, or myself down here. It was another gentleman that was another 21-year-old guy. The owner of the company overseas in Sydney, Australia, was a multi-billionaire, 34-year-old billionaire. He's been in multiple...
billionaire with a B.
There's quite a crazy story for another conversation on that individual. Wow. But I learned a lot, right? That was just a different mindset. I got introduced to, I'll call it high net worth. Like, this guy, when he'd come over, he would fly on the Concorde over here. We'd go to Vegas for the weekend, and you'd be wiring crazy amounts of money, and you'd show up and you'd have like your little VIP. So it was just a different experience, right? And he'd done a very good job of taking, I'll call it, young people that were wanted to be better and do different things, and he just built a huge organization. But they've been a billion-dollar publicly traded company in Australia. So I left them and went and started a software business. So started a funeral home management software and development company, which everyone again told me I was crazy, because in the funeral industry back then, people didn't even use email, right? They'd fax their death certificates in. My dad would drive 2.5 hours to turn in like something to the newspaper rather than, because it was all about that communication, right? People would do sales. My dad would wait for the guy to drive into the town, bring the donuts and coffee, and that's how he'd buy his supplies for that month or whatever. So again, I was way ahead of the curve, right? But again, for me, I think that goes back to what I look at as risk and what I look at, because I was always betting on me, right? And I think that's one of the things that's allowed me to, people say, holy crap, this is risky, but I don't look at it as risk, because that's how I've always, my mindset's been tailored from day one, from an early age, right? So after that company, we sold that company. We became one of the largest developers and platforms in the funeral industry for funeral home management software. 21,000 plus funeral homes were using our software. We sold that to a publicly traded consolidator called Keystone Group.
Right? Now, Todd, before you get in there, because obviously from a business, a leadership, and a sales perspective, an influence perspective, these are kind of the foundational kind of skill set that I'm hearing that you acquired. But when you started that software company that services funeral homes, probably from the background of your dad, how did you actually develop the software? Did you bring on coders? I mean, that's obviously a huge endeavor.
So we started off, again, I had a little tiny bit of money saved, and that's what funded the company. Did the friends and family, right? Put a couple hundred thousand in and built that organization from scratch. So Didn't know anyone down here really. So again, looking for coders, different things. So we had a team of roughly, when we started, about 8 people, and grew that to just under 30 people. So again, those were coders, those were web developers. A couple of the folks that had been with me in Ontario, the previous company called Edge Technologies, I'd brought down with me to the States. So I had a couple younger, I'll call it coders, those guys. Like, I don't know, I used to joke around saying, hey, Jeremy's the albino, right? He'd work all night crazy. As long as he had his Mountain Dew and caffeine, he was good. But again, they'd been with me. So I had, again, we'll talk about team, but like a couple of those guys that have been with me, they were with me at a pretty good crew for 17 years across 3 companies. So,
but did you have the technical background, or were you just really relying on your leadership in order to kind of like steer the crew in the right direction?
Yeah, so for me, it's more, I think I'm a big vision guy, right? I have the vision. I can set the vision. I can draw it on a whiteboard and different things. And then it's really about putting the pieces in place that complement the skill sets of what you have. And I think that's the good, I'll call it solid foundation, because your business ever is only as good as the people involved and the people that you build. So I call it, like John Maxwell, sort of the law of the lid, right? That's my law of the lid. Like my lid on that technology, I have to bring those people in to help facilitate that. So take my vision and then put it into that code and stuff. I think in the funeral industry, I had the background because I had the understanding of the processes of how traditional business was done. And I took that traditional business, saw a problem, and really provided that solution for, I'll call it the element of convenience and added functionality that I saw the market going towards. People were just starting to not carry around the big cell phones anymore, right? This was back in, I'll call it early 90s and stuff, or mid 90s. But again, and I saw more and more things going to a web-based application. We were developing a lot of websites for funeral homes because they didn't have it at that time. Yeah. And then we were taking the traditional death care forms from, let's say, the different states and provinces, and actually taking that paper document and converting it almost like into an EDI process or a web-based form. And that's basically what we did. We converted as much as we could as we saw that sort of trend rolling out, and then just kept on going that way. And I think it's a gradual evolution, but it was a piece put in front of a piece put in front of a piece with a grander vision, right? And from that company really spun out my next one, which was Layered Technologies. And that grew from a need to host our own solutions when we started doing web-based solutions, that we had more and more people at that time saying, hey, you're doing this for you, can you do this for us, right? So again, we were inside a data center for a few years until we thought, man, they're not giving us any more space. We can do this better than they can. And putting a few different pieces in place brought on, like you said, new talent, right, to help me fill in those holes that I didn't have. And then that was a crazy ride. That took off real quick. We were the first ones to ever host WordPress. So Barry and Matt, who started WordPress, they had two servers back in the day and grew that with us over, I had that company for 14 years. That's another lesson, I think, for people, that people always want things now, right? We're in the generation of everything has to happen now. So when people say, hey, what are you going to do with Icon? And we'll talk about Icon after. You've been going for 5 years. I'm like, crap, we're just getting started. I had the other company for 14 years, right? So 14 years, people go, holy crap, that's like a quarter of your life, whatever. But to me, it's that gradual evolution of process of making it better, of growing it, right? It's steps. And again, going in my mind, I know my limitations and what I can do within building an organization to a certain level. But at the next level, it takes different people, different skill sets, right? You never want to be the person.
Speaking of which, sorry to interrupt, but speaking of, you know your limitations, but also you also know your zone of genius. You talked about visionary, like influence sales. What would you say, Todd, from your perspective, kind of unpacking the box, at least up until this point, is your zone of genius?
I think one is looking at being able to carry that big vision and then drop that vision down to different people to enroll them in your vision. Because if you don't enroll people in your vision, they're going to have different visions, right? Then that vision starts to part. But when you enroll people in your vision, you also have to enable those people to not make you feel like a dictator and say, this is the way, right? You want to give them freedom, I'll call it, and not micromanage. That's one thing I think that's come, I'll call it both sides. Maybe that's zone of genius for me, because sometimes that probably comes back to bite me, right? But I don't micromanage. So if I'm hiring new talent on and stuff, I'm going to enable them. I'm going to provide the resources and different things to make them succeed. And I think also it's leading by example. For me, that's been one of the biggest things, right? I'm not the guy that's just going to talk. I'm going to be the one that's walking the walk as well. So if we're working 20-hour days, right? Or I'm the guy that wakes up, anyways, I have all my life at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. And just to carry those things and put what is important to me in my life. So when other people see that, I think that's leading by example to a certain degree. But again, for me, it's also, I think when people always say, hey, what's the word that best describes it? I always tell people it's relentless, because when I get something in my mind, it's like, hey, what do you do? It's whatever it takes. And that's across all the board. There's been lots of times in business when, hey, I don't know how I'm going to make payroll, right? Or I don't know how I'm going to do this or that. But it's not an oh crap. It's okay. Here's where we are. How are we going to solve that problem? And I'm all in. So it's whatever it takes. Like, and I'll just give you a quick story. So when I started my first company, right, the software company in the funeral industry, had no money, had nothing, had lots of debt. Me and my wife had just found out we were having our first baby. And then we go, and I had Layer Technologies then. We sold the funeral company, had Layer Technologies 14 years later. We go ahead and I'm like, this is back in 2014, and we're about to sell that. And I said, hey, Deb, I'm starting another company called Icon Meals. And she's like, what the heck? Why can't you just like go get a normal job? You've got money now, right? And just like 9 to 5, be happy. But that's not me. And we found out, like, we're having another kid. And I'm like, I've got 21, 17, 5. So I found out my 5-year-old is about to be born. She's like, holy crap, this is like deja vu all over again. But that's just... for me, I'm never going to be the one that is satisfied and settles, right? I always want, I think I thrive on that risk, and I thrive on that, hey, what's next, right? Because I want to be in the trenches. I love building, and I'm passionate about building. And then also just looking at, like, how do you provide a solution to so many different things? So all these ideas, right? And trying to zone in on one of those ideas, and then really looking at, okay, there's so much stuff out there today, and people always say, hey, well, this idea may be not so good because there's all these other people doing it, but you can always look at also making improvements and different things on other ideas, right? That don't have to be these huge grand ideas. There's so much opportunity, but people, I think, have blinders on sometimes to look at opportunity. They don't see it. They think, mm-hmm. Oh, it's too much work. It's too much this. But, and that's always why for me, like all the people that have ever worked for me, I want to encourage them. If people come to me and say, hey, I'm going to do my own thing. Great. Like, I want other people to succeed. But I've had so many people also come in and they want more of this, they want more of that, but they never want to take that risk, right? They want all the rewards, but they don't want the risk. And to me, it goes hand in hand, because the risk, you should be betting on yourself, because you're the one that controls that risk. So it's like, I think it's sort of that double-edged sword, but it's just that mindset from early on for me, right? Like when I couldn't work at Honda, my mind didn't go that way. I couldn't put steering wheels on. I couldn't put lug nuts on for 2 hours at a time. And I have friends that have MBAs working there and they're happy as anything, but that's mm-hmm. just not me. That's not how my mind works. I'm like all over the place, right? I'm like that squirrel. Saw this nut and I'm chasing that over there, but I learned how to zone in on what I do well. And then follow that path and bring the other resources, right? Those people, the other things to complement my skill set. And that's what I think has been able to allow me to build to where we are today.
Yeah. Now that's incredible and so much to unpack, specifically to your risk tolerance is kind of a common theme in your story. You know, our audience are primarily interested in entrepreneurship or fitness or both, right? So what would you say, you know, your level of risk tolerance would be? And then also, like, the best piece of advice for someone maybe wanting to start a business, but their risk tolerance isn't maybe where it needs to be. Can you kind of elaborate and go a little bit deeper on that?
Yeah, I think the risk tolerance for an entrepreneur is a key thing, right? You have to really, it goes back to believing in yourself and having confidence in yourself. And I learned way back that, like, I want everyone to succeed, right? And so many people, including like people in my family and stuff, I want them to succeed, but sometimes I want them more than I can control, right? So it's like, I want to take off my head and put it on their body and just like in their fitness career, right? I have lots of friends that are overweight and different things, and they give me tons of excuses on why they can't. And I told you like sort of my story going back to when I never really got into really good shape until I was 35. I told you sort of how I lost all that weight at 18, 19, but it took me until I was 35, okay? So which is only basically, I'll call it 10 years ago, 11 years ago, to really understand fully, hey, what diet meant, right? And what the different pieces meant. And that was a mindset shift. But going back to risk on the business side of it, I've always had the tolerance to risk. And I'd say my tolerance to risk is almost 100%, where some people go, holy crap, like it's way too much. And like, hey, I can't sleep, I can't function, different things. But for me, if I'm betting on myself and I'm the one, like, I control that pen to write my story, right? Like I'm writing the chapters. I'm not letting someone else write my chapters. So it's, hey, how much money do you want to make? Or how am I going to solve this problem? It's not going for other resources. I have to be the one to put those resources, put those solutions. And that also, I think, is to me, risk and procrastination go hand in hand because so many people put risk, but then they put things off, right? And when you put things off, that level of procrastination, I think, puts more anxiety and more more what ifs into people's mind. And if you just, that's one of my things, anything that I don't want to do, right, outside my comfort zone, and this goes back to that network marketing thing, are the things that I know I need to do, right? So if I have like something that, hey, this is like, I don't want to confront it. I'm a guy that I don't like confrontation, right? I'd rather not have the confrontation, but I learned early on, if you don't face that confrontation head on, then you are going to have issues and you're going to let people run over you and your business for all times, right?
Way bigger issues, yeah.
Correct. And I think that's one of the key things that I want to like put into my children and stuff as well, right? It's like, you have to address those things head on. Your risk tolerance is controlled by you. So that word risk to me even has a lesser connotation because I believe I'm in control. And that goes back to my mindset. But if someone's not working on their mindset, not working on that level of confidence, right? If you can't believe in yourself and you don't have the confidence in yourself, you have to go find someone else that believes in you more than you believe in yourself, at least when you start, to help you propel you to the next level. And it's really, I think a lot of people go when they start businesses and they look for that, hey, I want to make $1 million, I want to make $5 million, but they haven't started yet, right? You have to break it down. How do you eat that elephant? You got to take the little pieces. And I think what people sometimes don't do as an entrepreneur is they don't reward themselves on minimal steps. And I'm not talking about material things, right? But they have to celebrate those small victories to allow them to get to the next step. It's not like a big celebration, but it's a big, hey, okay, we're here. Congratulate yourself, right? Break it down. Do something, but then it's not days or weeks. Maybe, hey, you've celebrated for an hour, right? But move on. And then always be looking farther forward. And I think that takes your risk level down. When you look at farther out, not just sort of, that was Canadian, that out.
Yeah.
But from the standpoint of don't just look at, so I always say to me, risk, let's say for instance, I don't know, the first time ever, this is like a lesson, that I was in business and someone sued me. I was like, what the heck? I like have all this integrity, all this value. I never do anything wrong. I'm like, what's this guy suing me for, right? And I was like, holy shit, my business is going to go, my reputation, blah, blah, blah. How am I going to handle this? But then I learned and looked way back where, how is this going to affect me 5 minutes from now? How is this going to affect me 5 days from now, 5 years from now? It's not. It's inconsequential, right? I had to address it, put it within this box, and let's get it off. And because if not, my anxiety kicks in, my risk, all this other stuff. But because you've conditioned yourself, and I think that's one thing that's key, people don't condition themselves for the worst case scenario, right? They're only looking at, hey, entrepreneurism is supposed to be all these bells and whistles and light. It's not. It's a total opposite. No one ever saw anything for those 14 years of layer technologies of building, right? The crap that I went through, the 24 hours in the data center that I was in, right? And different things. And the same with fitness. Like I'm 46 and people always say, holy crap, you're in awesome shape. Yeah, you're taking all this crap. I'm not, okay? They don't understand though that it's been 12 years of every single day in the gym. I'm the most boring guy eating, okay? I can eat the same thing, but I know what works for me. So it's again, yes, looking at like, it's the same thing on I call it training and stuff, as you know, it's risk, right? It's like, what are you doing to propel you forward on that change? And it's controlled by you. People can have all these outside influences, but they're only excuses. So like, I think if you're an entrepreneur or you're fitness and you know your goals, you got to be that racehorse. You put the blinders on, right? Because everything else on an entrepreneur is like, what if I did this? Maybe I make more money. What if I did this? What if I brought this person on? But you have to have the blinders because you just got to go straight forward down the racetrack to get to at least one level before you maybe take off the blinders for a minute and go, okay, there is this opportunity, there is this opportunity, and I've matured enough to know where those opportunities fit in the pieces of my business, right? That we maybe can go based on an analysis to show if it is an ROI, if it does do this for us. But if not, the blinders are on and we're back on course. And I think that's the same parallel between fitness and business. And I love this. I don't know if anyone else agrees to me. Maybe your listeners say, hey, this is crap. But to me, business partners and other people, even just, I'll call it people in my organization, I go, let's go train, okay? So before we ever do business or we sign, let's say, a joint venture or something, we're going to go train. And I hear that some people go, oh, yeah, I used to do this and that 12 years ago, and I used to lift this much weight, but, oh, you know, I had this injury and stuff. And I already hear the excuses before we get in the gym, right?
Right.
And I say, shit, if this is coming out and these excuses are coming out now, I know some of that's going to correlate into when we're in the trenches in business together. And I see that parallel so many times, because if you're giving me excuses, and I've had people that come in the gym with me, like I'll call back in the network marketing days and stuff, and they'd throw up different things, blah, 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 but they would never quit. right? They would keep going, forging ahead. And that's what I want as a partner in business, a life partner, et cetera. Someone who sort of walks that walk, doesn't just talk. If I hear those excuses and stuff, and that's going back to, again, they haven't worked on themselves enough in their mind. And those excuses penetrate their mind, right? And different things are penetrating their mind. And then they're getting, hey, they want to set themselves up. So just in case something happens, or hey, we're not going to lift this, or they hear we're doing legs, oh, the legs, this and that. It's just, so again, that parallel I've drawn, I love looking at that parallel, because I truly believe how someone trains, or if it's MMA or whatever, is a parallel to how they're going to operate in business. And again, that's worked well for me over the years.
Yeah, good on you. A lot of parallels there, and I couldn't agree with you more. And the big message I'm hearing is, you know, being an entrepreneur, you have to take vision, you have to take risk. We talked about persistence and relentless, which are common themes in your messaging, which I want to point out. Great learning lessons to the audience. Todd, before we transition to ICON, which is obviously going to be the focus of the conversation, before we go, the other common thing I'm hearing is salesmanship and influence. And this is basically when you're network marketing days, this is when you're starting companies. So because our audience are interested in fitness and entrepreneurship, specifically, at least what I found, people in fitness maybe are scared of the word sales, but I think it's foundational. And 100%. I venture to say that's a huge reason that you've been successful, not only at ICON, all the companies you started, and also the sales role. Can you talk a little bit about how salesmanship influence has really aided you in your journey?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest benefits, Bryce, for me is I learned early on to not, like, again, I didn't really know, hey, network marketing with sales. When I was told to go knock on doors, I was like, I didn't know anything, right? I was 18, 19 years old, and again, knocking on doors, asking people to buy things that were complete strangers, and probably nowadays I would have got shot. But going forward, I think one of the biggest things that's benefited me is, like, when I built Edge Technologies and when I built my first software company, right, for Outdoor Solutions, from that standpoint, I was in a room dialing for dollars. I was making hundreds of phone calls a day. Didn't know any better. Back then, I was using a fax machine. We were fax blasting 10,000 plus people a day. I was in a room that was, I remember my first office, it was all concrete walls. So like literally 2-3 weeks in, I decided to paint all the walls like the Paris Hotel blue, because at least I felt like I was outside. I had no windows or anything because I was in that place for 20 hours a day. But again, calling and learning to turn, I'll call it negatives into positives, and no never means a no, it just means not now, right? And the biggest thing I learned from the network marketing, which has helped me, I say it's one of my top values that I've tried to build and top tools that I've had, is build relationship capital, okay? The biggest thing is to build relationships in your business, because, and you have to be a person of integrity, right? You have to have those values and you carry those values forward. Every single relationship you build, and when I say it ties back to sales, because sales, everything in life is sales. You're either selling or you're buying, okay? So one of the two. And if you're not a good salesperson, then it means you don't have confidence in yourself, right? In the beliefs and different things that you need to work on yourself. But building that relationship capital is really about every single interaction you have with someone on that sales process, if you want to call it, like I said, you're selling or you're buying, but you want to go into that interaction providing as much value as you can, expecting nothing back, okay? And you'll be just mind blown down the road how much that pays itself back. Let's call it karma, whatever else you want to call it, but you're building that relationship capital that then you can leverage into other things, right? And for us, all my businesses, I haven't had tons of salespeople. Like, we'll talk about ICON, I have zero salespeople, one sales guy, okay? But it's grown huge over the past 6 years based on relationship capital. My relationships that I built with, I'll call it partners and friends that are now affiliates, right? Corporations. Going into relationships that we built with Bedros and yourself and different things, right? Mm-hmm. All those things go back to relationships. And I've had some great mentors that have really helped me on that, shape what I need to do. And I think that's my biggest value, my biggest wins. And we have a couple, and I'm working on one, which I'd probably say right now could be my potentially biggest that I've ever had in my career out of any of my companies. But that's all started from a spark of relationship building, right? And I think that's key. Yeah. And again, as you grow in a fitness business, you got to build a relationship, right? You have to have, if you're a trainer, you're bringing someone in to sell them on your club or a fitness franchise or whatever, you have to be able to relate. And I always used to use, like, network marketing. I don't know if you probably have heard this before as well, but like the feel, felt, found. Hey, I know how you feel. I felt the same way. This is my solution. And again, that works for me in a lot of things, right? Like if someone came back and I was selling, I don't know, software early on, or I was selling microchips, they say, hey, it's too much money, blah, blah, blah. Well, hey, I know how you feel. It is too much money based on this, but hey, I felt the exact same way. And I know how you feel if I had this business, but here's what we did, right? And this is how we're putting it on sale, blah, blah, blah. But again, relating, building a relationship. I look at sales as having a conversation back and forth. And just, won't call it deflecting, but really you have to understand. It goes back to almost like psychology of the human mind and of the body and stuff, right? The sign language and different things. Like even for a fitness professional or whatever, I would go and get like the neuralistic programming language, NLP and stuff, learn that different things, because that's, again, building the biggest muscles that you're gonna ever have for anything, right? And don't look at sales as just a numbers game as far as a dollar amount. It's really, again, going back to like, again, when you have more confidence and stuff, probably a lot of people don't, they sell themselves short. They sell their product or their offering for not enough money. And I know Bedros is a big point of this. Get that value, right? Mm-hmm. Learn to understand your value, provide way more value than you ever think you're going to get back. And then that becomes a non-starting point, right? In regards to what price and different things. And again, the relationships are so key, because then a sale never becomes a price target or a price element. It's really like, it's a relationship of trust, of loyalty, of integrity, of different things, right? And that liking factor. And I think that's, again, all the companies that we've had have been built based on those key principles.
Yeah, good on you. And what we teach our franchise, and Todd, you hit the spot on, what Bedros and the rest of our leadership team is, first and foremost, we are not in the fitness business, the health business, the nutrition business. First and foremost, we're in the people business, the relationship business, to your point. Because once you have that relationship, then basically bliss occurs and you're able to influence and really serve at a higher level. The other thing that you didn't point out, but just observing you, Todd, is this is something that we teach our franchisees, is not only is the relationship, but sales is a transfer of energy. And just, you know, talking with you, you have such great positive energy, you vibrate at a high level. Those two things, I know that your focus, your really determination, you're relentless about, you know, creating relationships, and that having just awesome energy has definitely, without a shadow of a doubt, from at least my humble opinion, outside eyes, been a huge, you know, factor in your success. All right, so now I want to transition to Icon. So let's talk about Icon. First and foremost, just tell us about the company, and then, of course, we'll drill in a little bit about your role and your day-to-day, et cetera.
Yeah, it's funny. People say, oh, man, you went from software and technology into the food business. How, right? What?
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah.
And again, that goes back to, I think, being, like I said, lumpy, right? The kid that didn't really know how to eat, was overweight, different things. To me, I had a few friends that had other businesses in this industry, in the food industry, and it's really like a passion. I'll call it passion play for me, or passion project is how it started. I believe that we can change a lot of people's lives through nutrition, right? Through food. And the big thing I've always had to have in any business is really looking at two things. My mentor and one of my first partners always told me, you have to have residual or recurring revenue in a business. I look at food as that residual recurring revenue. And people can argue whatever, but every single person has to eat, right? They're gonna eat every day. And it's not like a supplement where you buy it once a month and then you go back. It's every single week people are ordering food, right? The second thing you have to have is you have to have a solution to a problem. And the solution that I was providing when looking to start Icon was really that element of convenience. People live busy lifestyles, right? There was all the meal kits out there. There was the Blue Aprons, the HelloFreshes, this and that. It's all great. People might think that they want to make a meal at home with the ingredients, but we have to admit, like, even prior to COVID, we were busy people, right? So from that standpoint, it's that element of how can I get a chef-prepared five-star meal, healthy ingredients, delivered, that someone can reheat within 1 to 3 minutes and have that, whether, I don't know, it's, let's say it's a busy executive mom, right? She's got 4 kids, she's all crazy entrepreneur, but then she's picking up the kids from soccer. She can feed the whole soccer team Icon meals on paper plates, let's say, within 1 to 3 minutes, 5-star chef prepared, whatever dish they want. Or she can have that same meal with her husband with a, I don't know, a bone china and a glass of vino, right? With the same sort of element to it. So it's really, again, that element of convenience. We ship all over the US. So Icon provides prepared meals, right? We have two different menus, signature menu, which is 30 different items weekly that are, I'll call it chef prepared, where we have different ingredients, different macros. I don't know, maybe it's lasagna. We have, I don't know, bison burgers, whatever, right? Different things. Mm-hmm. And we also have the a la carte or the custom meals menu, where if you know your macros and you know your dietary requirements, et cetera, you can actually build a meal to meet your specific demand. And that's how I wanted to start Icon. I knew that what I liked, I'm very picky. And again, some of the other stuff that was out there was, hey, it was on the shelf and I could have what it said it was, but I wanted the exact amount of protein. I wanted it with not a lot of sodium in it, right? I wanted it with just, so all our custom meals are just whole food. It's just grilled, baked, steamed, etc. And people say, oh, hey, it's bland. Well, that's the whole point of building custom meals, right? To your exact macros. If you have dietary requirements, if you have this or that, there's no oils, no anything else, no seasonings on it. So, and then being able to facilitate that shipping experience overnight anywhere within the US. So if you order by 2 p.m., your meals are ready next day. We're the, I believe, the only company that does that. We ship 5 days a week. All over the US, including Puerto Rico, Hawaii, so anywhere that FedEx serves. Mm-hmm. And then we also built out a snack line. We built out a functional food, I'll call it line as well, really looking at what elements of food that we could add convenient ways to get additional protein outside of the actual meal. So we have like the protein popcorn, the chips, we have a high protein Wagyu bar. And then we came out with our own seasonings and spice line just to, again, complement those meals, right? Give that additional flavor. High protein coffee with nootropics. So again, just trying to really get different things in the household that instead of going in the pantry and grabbing something that's has a lot more of all the different processed nature, right? You can grab a healthy snack. And I call it sort of the protein popcorn is probably a good, better, bad choice, right? It has the only one that doesn't have a clean ingredient deck. It has sugar in it, natural sugar. But people absolutely love it. They've been telling us not to change in different things. And so that's really where Icon is. We've grown that up 95% of the business online, direct to consumer. During the pandemic, that sort of also exploded just because I think the buyer behaviors more been at home. So we saw a big spike there. And then the snacks in some of the big box stores. So we're in Walmart, we're in Vitamin Shop, Army Air Force Exchange, and a bunch of others pretty much all across the US. We have some international business. Since COVID, that's a little bit less just because some areas, Canada is still 100% shut. So but again, that's sort of where we are with Icon, and lots of new things that are constantly evolving, and got some new things that we'll be rolling out. We're excited about.
Awesome. For curious perspective, because you talked about the signature, you know, option versus the, you know, custom. What's the vast majority of your business? Is it one or the other, or a mix of both?
Yeah. So if you said, let's say you say 100,000 meals a week, whatever, you're probably on a daily basis, depending, I don't know, a few thousand custom meals. So it's still a large percentage signature, which are, again, the biggest thing is people come to us and say, hey, I know I need to eat healthy or I want to eat better, right? What do I need to do? Okay. Yep. So we've created a couple, I'll call it simplistic boxes. So we have like a chef special box, which is sort of a sampling of all the different meals, or we have a lean box, which is sort of just a protein, a carb and veggies, three different options that people can pick that are healthy options, 300 calorie meals, et cetera. We have a keto box. So there's a lot of different buzzes, you know, in the industry, keto or this kind or paleo, what are the words, whatever they are. But again, it caters to that, right? So they have their macros, they have all the ingredients. We are a state and USDA inspected facility. So from that standpoint, we have a full inspector that lives in house with us. So again, all you guys out there, it's not meal prep's not apples to apples, right? It's apples to bananas and stuff. There's so much different things, but so many companies have popped up all over the place that there's just, it's one of our biggest frustrations trying to educate the end consumer on the differences. Because again, from a value standpoint, it's pretty crazy the differences.
It is. And speaking of value, and actually one thing that separates you, can you talk a little bit about the way you basically preserve, or I guess, you know, the packaging, because that's very different than what, you know, the average food prep service does in terms of the quality. So can you, you know, share with our audience a little bit more insight there?
Yeah. So roughly, I guess, almost 4 years ago, we went to what's called cryovac packaging. So it's basically a vacuum seal technology. So we have two big machines. They're called multivac units. And the food goes through a tunnel. And basically, for lack of better terminology, it sucks the oxygen out of the meal. So everything's in our facility. We have a 32,000 square foot facility we operate mainly out of, and in Dallas. And in that facility, we don't have a freezer, believe it or not. So everything goes out fresh. The only way it would come frozen to you is we do dry ice because of it's 115 degrees and 130 degrees in a truck in Texas. So it might come frozen to you that way, but it goes through the tunnel and sucks the oxygen out. So what that does, it basically sucks everything down. So you don't have freezer burn. You can't have any pathogens or anything in that meal until oxygen is reintroduced to the meal. So some people do like a skin pack and stuff. That injects nitrogen or a different gas into the food. We're not a big fan of that technology. And There's a couple others, but that last longer and just, again, preserved with a gas, flesh, and different things. We have 12 to 15 days shelf life refrigerated. If you choose to freeze that meal and you put it straight in the freezer, you get 6+ months with 8 freezer burn with 8 different things. So you'll put that meal in the vacuum seal technology into the microwave. You put it on for whatever, again, your preference, 1 to 3 minutes. It'll bubble up and basically re-steams the meal, heats it up, and then you just tear off the strip. But again, we did that because traditionally, you're going to get 3 to 5 days. When people pack them in, a lot of people get meal prep in a, I'll call it a clamshell container, so a bottom that you put the top on, right?
Yep.
One of the biggest things is, as well, a lot of people in food prep, they cook, they plate, and then they pack all in a warm environment, which is 100% wrong, right? You have to follow a sequence of, after you cook, it has to go into blast chillers, and every single different piece of food has to, it has different temperatures that it has to come down and cool at within seconds, minutes, whatever. But so for us, once we're done in the main kitchen of cooking, it goes into an area that, I think you've been here, but it goes into like an area that's 32 degrees all across until it gets packed into the actual boxes. So it never goes back into heat. And that's important because then you can't have any of the pathogens, right? And the heat coming up and down. On a clamshell, when you typically just put the lid on, what does it do? It takes everything in that oxygen and just packs it in the
puts
meal.
It right in.
So you got oxygen, you got pathogens, you got all this. And then what do most people do with that? When they ship it with gel packs and this and that. Well, again, we've got, I don't know, so much different technology and testing on gel packs and boxes and different things just for how it does. But again, we want to get that meal to an end consumer in the utmost state, right? The freshest state, the way that it can be preserved without anything else in it. And again, I want to provide the same level to everyone. If I'm not going to eat it, right, then I'm not going to ship it out. So again, that's been a thing for us. We also cook 100% from the raw, which is a big difference. Under inspection, many, many people, they'll buy pre-bought chicken, pre-bought or pre-cooked items, right, to put in. We have 100% raw room. It's a lot harder under inspection to meet the criteria and different things, but all our meats come in fresh. We trim, our brisket is, it's pretty crazy, big rakes, and they put their fingers in these rakes and strip all the fat, everything internally. But that's another thing that we're never going to skimp on, quality and integrity. We made that decision when we started the company. So it's just, sure, I could make more money and do different things. It's probably a lot easier on the process. But again, that's a differentiating factor for us that we intend to continue to build in all elements of the business.
Yeah, and I think just quality is so, so high with Icon. And to your point, I think it was actually right before the world changed, end of 2019 is when myself, Petros, Matt team kind of checked out your location and just blown away the cleanliness, the whole operation there. So it's definitely very helpful to give our audience insight from the fitness aspect. Now I want to transition to a little bit about, you know, your role as a CEO, kind of what's your day-to-day, kind of what is it within your scope? And certainly there's some, a lot of business parallels. And then also not only give us that, but also give us the suck factor. Like, what is the stuff that is not desirable, but ultimately still lands on your plate? And that way our audience has just a proper understanding of what's it like to be a CEO, and also like the good, the bad, the ugly.
Yeah, I think for my daily basis at Icon, it's really, I'm the one that puts that big vision out there, right? And then we got to go back and we got to fill in the pieces on how to build that vision. And I think early on, especially in my last company, I used the term like law of the lid before with John Maxwell. If you haven't read that book, it's a great book. But I think that's where I was hitting the ceiling. When I came into Icon, it was different. I've had, in my past company, I had 220 employees. I'll call it more C-level, right? Like more people, hey, have a conversation. And here we've got, I think, roughly 85, 90 people now, but 67-ish, let's call it 70 in the kitchen, right? A lot not English speaking. So it's a different transition. I've got like C-level, maybe 6 people here. So I was that guy that, hey, I'll call it the most experienced, the most this and that. And that's that law, right? I was not back in the game of, hey, my masterminds. I didn't have my personal weekly coaching. I have 2 different coaches I use on a weekly basis. And I quickly got back into there because I needed to lift that lid up, right, to allow me to have that next level. And that was where we brought in. I brought in Lisa, who's my COO. She came from California. She had sold a food company, wasn't looking to get back in, but again, relationship. We built a relationship, right? She didn't need the money to come work, etc. And so that's how she came in. My partner Danny, I think it's complementary skill sets, where Danny's background is the Omni Hotels, catering. He did all the menus. He's grown up in the culinary world, right? And those sort of those two of my marketing, my background in business, finance, et cetera. And then Danny's on that. It was a good mesh together. So we have those two pieces, right? And then it's looking at, okay, so now you have those. So how do you put the other pieces in place, right? How do you bring in additional talent to fill in that vision pool for you, bring in the skills? And then if we don't have the skills, hey, how are we training them? How are we training them two in a box, right? So that we're never sort of one off where one person's gone and then, hey, the whole world shuts down, right? So never getting into those traps. And then looking at building to the structure, you don't have to have a blueprint that's like followed 100%, but you have to have a foundational blueprint that other people can see. So it's not only your vision that you cast, but you have to put smaller pieces that they can attend to. And like I told you, I'm not the guy that micromanages, right? So maybe that's a downfall. But again, putting, I'll call it steps that they can achieve in there and seeing that they can achieve and building their confidence up, right? So putting a lot of those people that I have, I'm always going to get them books to read. I'm always going to encourage them to go to conferences that we'll reimburse, right? I'm always going to put them into different, I'll use my mentors or like, again, when Bedros came in and spoke at our mastermind and stuff, what we did for our affiliates and our employees and stuff, right? There's different things that we're going to try to enroll them in that vision to help them to grow. Because I believe if someone comes in and starts in an organization at here, it's not just that they stay here for the whole time, right? We want to help them grow as an individual to level up, which also allows the business to level up. So a large part of the early on years for us were, for me, we're really building, I'll call it the sales business through affiliates. So building relationships that people found value in the product that we created that then they would share with their audience organically. And we weren't the people that, hey, paid these big salaries to like, hey, pay for posts and stuff. It was, again, building that relationship. I feel like we have more like a family atmosphere built around that. And I think that's much tighter. And people say, well, how did all these people still been with you for 6 years and stuff? And you're not compensating them with huge amounts of salary than else for. Because it's that relationship, it's that key relationship that's the stickiness, right, in the organization. And I think if you don't look at everything as an organization, as money, on how can I get this, again, going back to how can I provide value, right? How can I provide more value to someone to see a way that they can grow? And to also include it, I'll call it, to our clients. How can we provide value so that every email that goes out, it's not a sales email or a discount email. Like during COVID, we made the decision to switch from a weekly email to a daily email. Mm-hmm. That we would provide stay-at-home workouts, we'd provide mindset from different people, we'd provide articles from, I don't know, Sean Wells, right, the ingredientologist, Gabrielle Leon, etc. We do stuff from Mike Gorham, do stuff from like different people. And then also like internally to us, to me, it was like sharing the resources, sharing Man Up, the book, with all my people and different things. So from that standpoint, it's just, again, on a daily basis, you're working through different things, but I try to allocate my day. A lot of people, this might be one takeaway where a lot of people, they say, hey, a list works good, right? They write down this list every day of things they have to accomplish. And I've tried to help all my folks and people in my circle tailor it down to, I'll call it, 3 to 5 to maximum maybe 6 things that really provide an ROI on your business and on your life every day. Are these 6 things moving my business forward? And are these 6 things, if they're personal, moving me as an individual ahead, right? And those are key things, because I used to be the guy that would write everything down. I felt good because I was stroking everything off. But it's like that sort of, you get stuck working in the business instead of on the business. Right. And that's a key thing that I've learned from like Andy Frisella and other people, is really having those few things that, hey, I feel like I've accomplished and I've moved the needle forward, I'm good. I can leave for the day, right? It's not just, hey, I got to stay till 6:30 or 7 o'clock because I got to put my 15 hours in and say I'm an entrepreneur. It's, have I really moved that needle forward and knocked off things? And again, some of those things for me are those things about procrastination, right? Those things that I don't want to do. I don't want to have the hard conversation with the guy that owes me $300,000, right? Or I don't want to have the conversation with my bank that I have to extend the line or this or that, right? Or again, giving you an example, when I got sued early on. And in the food industry, dude, we've been like, there's tons of people trying to sue you all the time. My lawyer was like, when's this going to happen? He's like, you're just getting started. He goes, the food industry is prime. But again, my mindset was like, holy crap, like, this is crazy. And I had to overcome that, right? And work through that. And again, help me advance in the business. So for me, probably a little bit different. My day starts, like I said, 3 o'clock in the morning, pretty much every day. Set the alarm for 4 o'clock. I'm still going to wake up before that time. And I'm excited to start the day. I love what I do, right? And not just saying, hey, it's Icon, but I love blessed with another day to get up. I'm working on myself before anyone else gets up. And that's my time. And I have to have that time. people say, oh, that's selfish. Well, no, because if I don't have my time and I'm not training or whatever to get my mind, that's like my therapy, right? Then I can't be at my best to provide value to my employees, to my wife, to my kids and different things. So that's a routine I've lived by for a long time. And I go through, won't get into it, but I have a certain routine that just helps me on a daily basis sort of move through the pieces, right? That's like my, I'll call it my grateful, what am I grateful for? And all these other exercises that I do on a daily basis that really propel me to where I need to be. And if I'm worked out in a couple of days or whatever, my wife's like, get in that gym, like go.
Let's go. So,
but that's sort awesome. Of, again, for me.
Awesome. So much to unpack there. And one thing I was kind of taking notes, my big takeaway, especially when you talked about how you kind of created it, scaled from a relationship perspective, like going back, like relationships are foundational to business. And if you're listening to this audience, kind of how that could apply to your business, the way Todd has actually grown Icon through his business relationships, it's, you know, launching your business and then finding chiropractors or doctors or health spas or, you know, different, you know, areas or relationships that are in the health and wellness space in your industry, or at least in a similar type of industry that can help basically funnel you clients and also you know, work together back and forth. So I think that's a tangible example of like what you've implemented in your business that I think our audience can do. And I think you've done it really well. So that all said, my friend, lots of golden nuggets here. I want to transition because I know you're such a busy guy. Be respectful of your time to our lightning round, which will really just give you the opportunity to throw some, you know, punchy value bombs before we shoot for today. Are you up for that?
Sounds good.
All right, rock and roll. So I know for sure you're such a passionate guy and it's going to be a huge reason for your success. What would you say is the one biggest thing you're passionate about today and why?
Providing more value to other people, I think, is the biggest key for me. I want everyone to find value in what we provide and be able to be that example that inspires or motivates someone else to want to be a better individual, right? And that's a big thing for me is really being, I'll call it as a parent. The big thing for me was I'm really passionate about, I'll call it the dad space or whatever, right? And I joke around like saying, hey, I had this thing like we have a website, Dad Bod Inc. And it's really, it's like understanding that element of taking care of yourself for your children, right? And I think that's setting the example. And I used an example like the other day, I have 21, 17, and all my kids have, I'll call it, it's interesting because there was never, hey, the work ethic and all this put in, but they saw what I did, right? And my kids, it's just great like to see my daughter just got the head of, she got the captain of drill team and stuff. But that's like 5:30 in the morning. She's coming home some nights at 10:30 at night, dealing with all the different things. And I'm not the one that's like, hey, you got to go to the gym. You got to go to the gym. But those beliefs and those things that they've seen in me, my son plays like North American Hockey League. He's been in Aberdeen, South Dakota for 2 years, just played his 100th game. But again, I'm not that one, right? I want to provide those different things, enable them to do it. And it's the same I said as my team. So I'm passionate about helping other people, giving back. I think one thing that's key, as you build and as you grow and as you add, I'll call it more dollars and monetary and wealth to you, look at that as a tool, right? That can create and be used to provide value to other things, right? To allow, it's not just that tool to buy material things that everyone says, right? And that's a big maturing step for me, really looking at how can I take that and leverage that into providing value in other people's lives through, like I said, being that inspiration, being that motivation, trying to encourage and provide confidence in them. So I think that's a key thing for me.
Heck yeah, awesome takeaway. Next up, certainly leaders are readers is something that you hit on about, you know, Law of the Lid, John Maxwell, just a lot of content. What would be your best book recommendation to our fitness
franchise? I think one of the biggest books that over the past year that I love, and it's Tim Grover, Relentless. If you haven't read that in the space, I think you need to read it. Tim Grover, Relentless. He's got another one that just came out called Winning, but again, Relentless is another one that's, I think, great for the sales element and the relationship. And I know you asked for one, I'll give you two. The Alter Ego, and that's by Todd Harmon. So everyone in life, believe it or not, has an alter ego, okay? And you need to understand that because that is a game changer for how you build your business and how you build your relationships and every interaction in life. So The Alter Ego by Todd Harmon.
Copy that. And Relentless, actually, to your point, that's one of my favorites of all time. And I'm not sure if it's the direct parallel between the alter ego, but he talks about the dark side and whatnot. Yep. So I'd imagine there are probably some parallels there. But
yeah.
That said, next up, habits are obviously foundational success. What would be one habit that you've picked up over the years that has been instrumental to you, you know, achieving all the success you have?
Sure. I'd say probably the number one thing for me is waking up early. Start your day before your day, right? And I think that's just been key. Maybe it's a good thing, sometimes bad thing, where, you know, I don't know, even if I'm on a holiday, the other side of the equator, right? I'm still going to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning or before, just because that's where my mind's wired. And I love getting in, I'll call it 4 to 6 hours before everyone else is up, right? That's how I extend my day. I think that's a key habit that so many people that I know are successful that implement and take that, where you're almost getting like another half day before your day. And again, people say, oh, I'm going to be tired. You won't be tired once it's that habit. You have to build that habit, right? So, and then it's just that engine going forward.
Big hats off there for that one. I mean, shoot, I'm an early riser as well. I get up at 4:30 every day, but I want to say, man, you take the cake on that. So hats off and well done. Last question, my friend. This has been so incredible. You've dropped so much value, but what would be one last piece of parting wisdom for audience who are interested in entrepreneurship, interested in fitness, interested just living a better life? What would that one last piece of parting wisdom be?
I'd have to say the one key thing that I'd want everyone to take away is understand that so many entrepreneurs, me in my life, everywhere else, always everyone tries to strive to be perfect, right? And they want, hey, before they go to the next level, this software that you're developing has to be perfect, right? Or I have to have, I don't know, this much body fat before I'm ever going to do a show on stage. And it becomes this game. But you have to understand that better is perfect, okay? There's never going to be perfect. It's better is perfect. You got to work on every single day working on being a better father, right? A better, let's say, like leader, okay? A better entrepreneur, a better person in the gym putting in more reps. That 1% a day leads to that. So there's never perfect. Perfect's this, I'll call it sort of cloud, right, of what you're striving for, but work on better, being better every day, and then better is perfect.
Oh, man, that is freaking gold. All right, my friend, this has been awesome. Where can our audience connect with you at?
Sure. At Instagram, it's Todd Abrams. Facebook, Twitter, all at Todd Abrams, TODDABRAMS. And if you guys like food and all that other fun stuff, you can follow Icon Meals at Icon Meals on any social media platform. And look forward to interacting.
Heck yeah, man. Well, Todd, my friend, want to thank you so much for your time. Before we shoot today, just want to acknowledge you, man. Your energy is top notch, second to none. I've gained a lot of value today. I know our audience has, and there's no secret why. A couple of years ago when I started working with Bedros a little bit more closely at the HQ side of things, you know, talking about, hey, Todd, one of my good buddies, like this guy's on point. And certainly, you know, the last couple of years and getting to know you and your organization, it's a big reason why our brand, Fit Body Bootcamp, is partnered together with you. So I acknowledge you for that. I want to thank you so much for dropping a lot of value to our audience today. It's been an absolute pleasure. And again, thank you for your time.
Awesome. Thanks, Bryce. I enjoyed the conversation.
You got it, buddy. Well, audience, I hope you got a ton of value as I did. This has been incredible. And as always, if you'd be so kind to go ahead and like and subscribe on YouTube, in addition to writing an awesome review if you got value from today's episode, so that way we can continue delivering this content for you for free. So aside from that, that's all I have for you today. Make it an awesome day. Thanks again.